this is a fact, guys.
Yeah.
Humans are cheaters.
So people sort of think that we should be like mammals and we should be doing it like they do it on the Discovery
yes.
Channel.
I guess like true monogamy, like sexual exclusivity and social monogamy would make sense if we weren't living as long, right?
Males and females, they meet as teenagers and they literally fuse their bodies together and they have sex and they die. So that's like crazy.
Okay, why haven't I seen that on a poster? Hi, I'm Dee Selman.
Hi, I'm Pip Rasmussen, and this is The Hookup. If you have never clicked on us before, we talk all things love, sex, dating, and relationships. And normally, we are led by you. You send us DMs and you ask us to answer questions and to debate topics with you, basically. But once a month or so, we do a research episode.
Yeah, this is something that Pip and I actually really love. It makes us feel like proper journalists, where we delve really deeply into a topic and figure out all the science and the research behind it. And, you know, last year we did things like AI relationships, we did
fem cells,
marriage, yeah. And Pip and I are really excited for this episode's topic slash actually pretty fucking nervous because it's a huge one. We are going to figure out whether or not humans are naturally monogamous.
We spent so long researching this. We have so many cited sources. The show notes are chockers if you want to go and check it out. But yeah, we're going to try and look at the science and the history of it. And we're not going to try and debate whether or not something is better, whether poly or monogamy is better or worse, because I know that people get passionate about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're going to do. We're going to just try and figure out if, like, socially we've been maybe conditioned into monogamy and whether or not we were, like, meant to be polyamorous or something, or if we were actually just biologically hardwired to, like, mate and to partner up with one person for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into it. Okay. First up, I think it's worth defining monogamy and a few of the terms that you're probably going to hear today. So monogamy, the custom of having a sexual relationship or marriage with only one other person at a time. So mono means one, gamy means marriage. Yep. And so you'll hear as well polygamy, which is poly, multiple.
Yes.
And then marriage.
Yeah.
But I think we'll use the term polyamorous.
Yeah, I think that's kind of...
Because you can't legally get married to multiple people.
Exactly.
In Western countries.
And also I think some of the research, like a lot of the research that we're about to reveal to you is like early human societies, like even like looking at monkeys and chimps and stuff. So I think polyamory is kind of like a better catch-all for what we're going to do. So on our Instagram, we wanted to actually just get a little indicator from you to see where you thought like the monogamy scale is with humans. We asked, are humans naturally monogamous? 45% of you said yes, 55% of you said no. And we had truly so many DMs of you weighing in on this. Caspar says, I'm in a marriage of 14 years, but firmly believe that monogamy is the way that we were meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Amy saying people always will want that trust and companionship from one partner. We'd like to feel special.
Dylan saying, it feels right to have that deep bond with one person and have that one-on-one focus. Dusty saying, yes, I think we all yearn for one person to love us. Doesn't mean that we don't want to play the field before, though.
Mm.
And a lot of people as well sending through texts that believe that we're naturally polyamorous. So Poke saying, yeah, monogamy is made up. Jack saying, in my opinion, most people have to actively put effort into being monogamous. So maybe we're not that hardwired to be that.
Mm.
Eva saying, I think without social constructs, we'd live like bonobos. And Rach saying, there's no way one person is supposed to be able to give you absolutely everything.
Yeah. So we're going to get into like those sort of social aspects of it. But I think let's start with like the science and the biology of it. Let's hear from some people who in the scientific community are very strongly saying humans are naturally non-monogamous. So we're polyamorous. We've got a lot of multiple partners, sexual partners, life partners, everything. So one of the books that kept coming up in our research and something that you recommended to us as well was called Sex at Dawn, written by Christopher Ryan and Casilda Jetha. And they argue that humans primarily are non-monogamous. They argue in this book that prehistoric humans were likely living in what they call small cooperative bands. In these bands, they were rearing children together in these like little villages or communities or whatever. So all the children were like getting raised by a bunch of different people. Also, they used apparently sex to help maintain social bonds which is really, really fascinating. So they were having sex with each other, and that was kind of like the societal glue in a way.
It's really, really fascinating. And another theory that they point to in the book, which I hadn't heard before, was the idea that humans have hidden ovulation, meaning that fertility isn't obvious. So for a lot of animals, it might be like swollen glands on the outside or pheromones that the female releases, but it's pretty obvious when she's ovulating and is like ready reproductively to have sex.
Mm.
But in this book, they argue that the hidden ovulation of humans means that it wasn't obvious when you could reproduce. So it encouraged frequent sex amongst everyone. So basically their idea is that sex evolved partly as a social glue and it wasn't just for reproduction, which we see in a lot of animals.
Mm. Also the big argument that a lot of other evolutionary scientists and biologists and anthropologists talk about is the evolutionary benefits to non-monogamy and polyamory. Someone who wrote about this a lot, David P. Barish, who is a professor of psychology and is an evolutionary biologist, he talks about like the obvious one being like males hooking up with a lot of females, aka it's called polygyny. That's just basically spreading someone's seed. That's like giving the human race legs and making sure that we procreate and we are having a greater population and there's more chances for genetic survival, right? So that's a pretty obvious one. He says that also more than 80% of early human societies were preferentially polygynous, aka, like I said, one male mating with many females. He wrote a little bit about females on the other side of this, which is called polyandry. And he was like, it's less clear, like the evolutionary benefits, but he did say, reproductively, it may represent a route to amassing more protection or resources, or it may be a mechanism for finding ever fitter genes for ever fitter offspring. So yeah, a lot of evolutionary biologists are basically like, that was why, you know, humans were fucking around, not only for the social glue of it, but just to continue the human race.
Okay, now let's look at the science and the people who believe that humans are actually naturally monogamous. So a big reason, Pip, is because we fall in love.
Yes.
Humans fall in love in a way that animals, other animals and species don't.
Yeah, we're super complex and we have chemicals like oxytocin that help us pair bond. And that's a word that you're going to hear us say a lot in this episode. It's the love drug that keeps us wired and it makes us want to stay with one partner. And it's something that a lot of scientists have done a lot of research into. Although it is really, really, really hard. Helen Fisher is somebody that like is quoted a bunch talking about this, like her life research is talking.
Well, she put brains in under scans and looked at where they lit up on in the brain.
And she was even like, it is so hard to actually find where the flashes and relate to feeling. And it's very difficult with these scans. But yeah, she has dedicated her whole life to researching this. And it is a huge reason why people are maybe considered monogamous.
Another huge book in this space, and one that you also DM'd us about, is a book called Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Human Evolution by Kat Bonahan. And basically, Kat argues that there are signs physiologically on the human body that kind of point to us being more monogamous than polyamorous. So across primates, this is one of them, across primates, testicle size relative to body size strongly correlates with mating systems. So what this means is that, for example, chimpanzees have extremely large balls and that was because they had to deal with intense sperm competition. Many males wanted to have sex with many females, and so to make sure that your sperm was the one that impregnated the female, you had to have a lot of it. So the bigger the balls, the more sperm, the more, I guess, like your shot will get the, I guess, the quote unquote, the egg.
Yeah. Whereas like humans have like medium, small-ish. Like when you see a monkey's one, sometimes they're like this big.
Massive.
But like us is like way smaller.
Exactly. And so her argument is that, yeah, humans kind of have medium-sized balls, which means that we probably didn't have that much sexual competition.
Yeah, not to mention as well, like the design of like human penises as well. Like when we look at animals, there are some pretty crazy designs out there. Like duck corkscrew, if you ever Google that, it's like traumatizing.
It's fucking so
like
bizarre.
The way that it like latches inside and like another animal, it's to like make sure that that sperm is hitting the egg and we are making babies. Whereas like male penises, like human male penises, are pretty straightforward.
Exactly. And that's another physiological argument that she makes, that penises basically just go straight into the vagina. Mm. Like, they're straightforward. The head isn't that hectic. A lot of other species have, like, really hectic heads that kind of, like, scrape out sperm from females that may have been sleeping with other males to make sure that their sperm doesn't get to the egg. And also the fact that our sperm basically just dribbles out. Like, if a female stands up, the sperm, it's like liquefied. It just drops out.
Yeah.
Whereas there are species where the sperm actually hardens and becomes like a plug to make sure that no other sperm gets to the egg.
I feel like as well when you meet people or people in your life are like, oh, yeah, we're trying to have a baby. And then like they'll be like, oh, I was doing handstands.
Trying
like
to get the little ass up in the air, trying to exactly. get the sperm to like actually drip back down.
Yeah. So that's so interesting. Like, yeah, looking at that like physiological evidence potentially to show that like, yeah, maybe we were biologically built for like monogamy. Like,
I guess that's the thing that she is theorizing is that we actually aren't as promiscuous as what people might think.
Yeah. I think also the common thought that people are animals and we should be like doing it like they do it on Discovery Channel. Like, that is such a common thread. And I think a lot of you kind of DM'd us and said the same thing. It's interesting though where you actually find humans and how they relate to monogamy in the animal kingdom and compare that. Like, if we're talking about chimps and stuff, right? Even though people sort of think that we should be like mammals and we should be doing it like they do it on the Discovery yes. Channel. Actually, that kind of common thought might just have been proven slightly incorrect. So there was this new research that only got published like last year, December 2025. The University of Cambridge, they did this study and they tried to figure out where human beings sit in terms of the scale of monogamy compared to 35 other species of animals. And we actually sit seventh, which is pretty high.
That is really high.
Yeah. So Dr. Mark Dybul is an evolutionary anthropologist at Cambridge, and he analyzed genetic data from animal and human studies and calculated the proportions of full versus half siblings for each. So what they were reproducing, whether they had half siblings or like full siblings from both parents. And we had a 66% rate of full siblings. There are a bunch of animals that did beat us, like the California deer mouse at 100%. We got the African wild dog. We got some mole rats in here. And like you were talking about in terms of like promiscuity and like animals who are non-monogamous, mountain gorillas only got 6% and chimpanzees and dolphins only got 4%. So our 66% is quite high.
It's quite high.
Like relative to that.
Yeah. And in general, I think as well, research shows that only 3 to 5% of all mammal species, excluding humans, actually form long-term pair bonds.
Yeah.
And these are the ones that people always talk about. And I think they use as like the pinup of like monogamy, you know?
The poster child
of monogamy. The prairie voles, yes. A huge one.
We got beavers in there as well, grey wolves, shingleback lizards, gibbons as well, and my personal favourite.
Yes.
The parasitic worm. It's called a Diplozoon paradoxum and it inhabits freshwater fish. Males and females, they meet as teenagers and they literally fuse their bodies together and they have sex and they die. So that's like crazy.
Okay, why haven't I seen that on a poster?
I know. Maybe they're just not pretty
but
enough for it.
People are talking about marriage and love of your lives.
Yeah. So in general, like these scientists who backed this research, they said the finding lends further weight to the view that monogamy is the dominant mating pattern for our species. But that being said, there actually were quite a few criticisms of this study. And we're going to get into this now because the way that they collected this data doesn't fully capture what a realistic population looks like in terms of monogamy. And we're going to break down how monogamy can be viewed in several different ways. So when scientists talk about monogamy, they often mean social monogamy. So that means basically two adults forming a partnership to raise kids. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't sexually monogamous. Mm-hmm. They might be having like other little side pieces around the place.
Yeah, this is a really important point. This is actually something that Anna Machen talks about. She's a world-renowned evolutionary anthropologist at the Department of Experimental Psychology at Oxford University. She's a really big deal. We'll add her stuff in the show notes. But she breaks down monogamy scientifically, which really does help us understand where humans land. So she says that there are two forms of monogamy. There is sexual monogamy, meaning that you are exclusively sexual to the person you're in a relationship. And then there's social monogamy, where you can coexist with someone to the exclusion of everybody else, but you're not necessarily sexually monogamous. And so when scientists talk, like Pip said, about monogamy, they're usually talking about pair bonding and social monogamy. True monogamy, which means that you would be sexually monogamous and socially monogamous, is in fact only 0.0015% of species. How wild is that?
So tiny. 0.0015%
of all species in the entire world.
Yeah.
Only that percentage are truly monogamous, aka no sex with anyone else.
Yeah.
Or anything else.
Yeah. Which is where I think this study gains a bit of like flaws and some criticism from people, because the way that they measured this is obviously like we're looking at who gave birth and whether you were a half sibling or a full sibling. And that doesn't really represent like the population in the best way, because it doesn't tell you who had sex with who. It's just about like your offspring and your children at that point. So a population could actually look monogamous reproductively, even if people are sexually non-monogamous. And we know that for a fact in humans. Like we have contraception, we have abortion, we have serial relationships where children still share parents. And obviously the big one, which we all know, infidelity.
Yeah.
Like we're cheaters. Like we are sexually desiring other people, even if we are pair bonded or mating with like somebody for life.
Yeah. This is a fact, guys.
Yeah.
Humans are cheaters. Jeremy sent us a DM about this saying, there's so much evidence that shows we're not naturally monogamous, sexually monogamous. Look at the rates of cheating. And yeah, this is absolutely true. According to a US survey from 2016, roughly 15 to 25% of married people report having had an affair at some point.
Also, these are people who are reporting it. You can imagine so many people who would be like,
I'm not saying that.
Yeah, exactly. And to take it back to like the science, and again, like that whole study about the animals and comparing that with humans, we think of these like beautiful little animals, like the prairie voles that are so cute and they mate for life and everything. We think that they're like truly monogamous, but when you really deep dive into it, they're not. Spoilers. And we actually found this on this really great episode of Science Versus True Love Is Monogamy Unnatural. And basically they spoke to this really great guy, Larry Young. He studied prairie voles. He was like the prairie vole guy. And he was like going on about the fact that their bond is extraordinary. Like people have written about these prairie voles being like, they're the best. Like we look up to them in terms of like monogamy. But yeah, even they have side pieces. And he said, even though they bond for life, that doesn't mean that they're never going to have an affair. Yeah. So again, when scientists talk about monogamy, we've kind of broken down about like sexual, social, but there's also this other thing called serial monogamy, where animals are staying with a partner for a breeding season, could be one, two or three of them.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're like going to mate for life.
And this is what many anthropologists think is the most typical human pattern. They believe that long-term pair bonds is what is natural for humans, that lasts several years, but is then followed by new partners after separation. You had some thoughts on this, because I guess like true monogamy, like sexual exclusivity and social monogamy would make sense if we weren't living as long, right? But we live for so long.
Yeah.
Like so it makes sense that humans would have multiple partners in their lifetime. Panda sent us a DM saying, maybe we're naturally monogamous but socially expected to stay together longer than what is natural. And Diana saying, I think humans are innately serial monogamous but polyamorous in between relationships while dating around. Monogamy made more sense when human lifespans were shorter.
Yeah. I think like, you know, back in the day when we were living to like what, tops of like 30? Yeah, you can kind of imagine being like not sick of somebody for that long. But now we're like hitting like 90 to 100. That has blown out that figure. And there's that thing called like the 7-year itch, right? And, you know, we see this all the time. And we've heard about your stories about this. People breaking up after 7 years. Divorce as well.
Yeah.
Long-term relationships ending is really, really common. And you had a lot to say about this too. M saying, I think it's defs a social construct or expectation to be monogamous, because why else would we have attraction to other people even if we're in a happy, healthy relationship?
Which is, it just makes so much sense, doesn't it? It makes so much sense. And Anna Machin, basically going back to the cheating thing, kind of concludes that our infidelity rate is far too high for us to be defined as a truly monogamous species because of this.
Yeah. And to get another expert into the room. Esther Perel talks a lot about this as well. And she kind of explains there is that tension between wanting that like life pair bonding and that stability versus like being like sexually devious and everything. And she writes about it in her book, Mating in Captivity. She sums it up by saying humans are capable of monogamy and in a lot of ways we really want it, but it conflicts with other equally natural drives. So she's talking about love. So the love is where you're like pair bonded, you want security, you want commitment and protection. But then there's desire, and that's also equally strong, where we want novelty, erotic freedom. We want the forbidden. Mm. Like we want something that we can't have. And it's like you don't have to look very far to be like, that's the human condition. Okay, so we've looked at like the science and the biology of it. There's a lot of arguments like yeah. for and against it, and people are still arguing to this day. But we thought, why don't we have a look at like the history timeline and see like what happened from the very beginning and why are we at where we're at now, where like monogamy is largely in our Western society? Where do we come from? Can we learn anything from that? So if we go right back to the evolution of the human, which is kind of what we were talking about and what you were saying about these like physiological things that were happening to us, we are very close in relative to chimpanzees. Mm-hmm. That's our common ancestor about 6 to 7 million years ago. They are predominantly non-monogamous. And there's all this scientific debate to figure out like why we made like the jump into monogamy. And scientists are like still arguing to this day. They don't have it down pat and they don't even know when it happened. Mm-hmm. So Dr. Dieter Lucas, who is an evolutionary biologist, he said, we don't quite know at what stage monogamy really first started in humans, and we also don't know why. So again, David P. Barish, who we quoted before, evolutionary biology can't exactly say why so many humans gave up polygamy and made the cultural move to monogamy.
Mm-hmm. But there are a few theories.
Yes.
Which is really interesting. So scientists have proposed that humans evolved to be more like towards pair bonded social monogamy because human babies require unusually long care. Mm. So for example, a lot of animals, I don't know if you've ever watched birthing videos, but like if you've seen a giraffe give birth, somehow this has been in my feed, it'll literally just start fucking walking. Like yeah. it'll get out of the vagina and just start like prancing around.
Yeah, it'll be a bit shaky. But you know, it's like give it a day and it's like, okay.
Totally.
What about like baby turtles hatching from their little egg on the sand and they're literally out to sea.
Mum's gone. Never again seen.
Never to be seen again. And they're like, good luck on our own. Obviously human babies, complete opposite. Like we're so helpless.
So helpless.
And there's all these like evolutionary stuff to figure out why that is. And it's because we've been like so big brained and we've like evolved into this like very like energy hungry little human that requires like so much more care. And they talk about this in this theory that we're basically slow to mature. It takes years to develop to a point where we can fend for ourselves. And therefore scientists have been like, so pair bonding makes sense because as a baby, we take so much resource. So it just can't be like the mum looking after us. We need like the dad to protect, like we need two people.
And so that's a huge theory around why humans evolved to become monogamous. And another theory that researchers have suggested as to why humans evolved to become socially monogamous is that having a partner was a way to protect your baby from getting killed.
Yeah.
Or eaten.
So infanticide is like a big thing, right?
In
like
chimps, yeah.
In I think primates and stuff.
Yeah. It's like a way they would kill other people's babies, which is so fucked. They kill other people's babies as a way to be like, I'm ruling out other competition and like I want my genes to be the genes that are successful.
Yeah.
And so researchers say that there's evidence that humans evolved as a bit of a survival mechanism to create these like pair bonds and to be socially monogamous.
Yeah, so that dad was around or mum could protect the
like,
baby. Yeah.
There was just like multiple people kind of defending the baby.
Yeah, yeah. Another big theory is also mate guarding hypothesis. So pair bonding reduces the risk of rivals fertilizing a partner, so having sex. So fending off any guys who are like, I'm going to hook up with your
impregnate
lady.
Your lady, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Looking at the anthropological data as well, so they suggest that around 80 to 85% of traditional societies allowed polygamy, which is like, again, what we said, one man, multiple wives. But in many of these societies, only a minority of men actually like had the resources, the power and the access, I guess, to this. Usually it was like wealthier and higher status men, which I think is something that you see pop up when you research this. Like, for example, in like Imperial China, like they would have like harems and stuff and multiple concubines living in the palace. But again, possibly could be like more of a wealthy person thing. I mean, not to say that people weren't like sleeping around and doing that in like villages and stuff, but yeah, definitely something that came up. If we look at like West African societies, community leaders or successful farmers might have several wives as well, partly because larger families meant more labor and stronger alliances.
But what's interesting is that some cultures even did the opposite. They had polyandry, which is multiple one wife having multiple husbands.
Yeah.
So in parts of Tibet and Nepal, brothers sometimes shared a wife, so family land wouldn't be divided between too many heirs. And I guess all of this shows that across history, humans really have experimented with lots of different relationship systems, right? It's hard to just be like, yep, monogamous. There were so many different ways from ancient civilization that humans were kind of forming relationships and having sex.
Yeah, but there were certain time periods that really changed and moved the needle in terms of like monogamy for humans. And we can take a look at that in terms of looking at like Greek and Roman societies as well as Christianity. So in ancient Greece and Rome, approximately about 2,000 years ago, they sort of established these socially imposed ideas of monogamy, partly for like social stability to manage inheritance, but all, you know, men still kind of had concubines on the side. So it started to become more popular to get more stable in society. But the big one, obviously, and you probably were waiting for us to talk about it, was Christianity. So that was first and fourth century AD. So Christianity like actively promoted monogamy. It was like a moral stance that people were to just have one wife. It really did change the way that society viewed relationships as
outside of marriage, right?
Yeah, like a sanctity.
A sin. It became a sin.
Yeah, exactly.
Infidelity was like, rather than I guess it being normal to have sex with multiple people but maybe having like one partner, it then became this, like you said, morally wrong thing to do. It became sinful to have sex with outside of extramarital affairs.
Yeah, and I think that was like the biggest like social conditioning moment throughout history, and it obviously took a long time. So yeah, obviously like throughout history, art, culture, all of it, like you can find the way that society changed a lot when Christianity was like widely accepted into, let's say, like Western society. And not only do like all these historians agree, but also like evolutionary psychologists say the same thing. So Robin Dunbar, who is an evolutionary psychologist at the University of Oxford, said previous work had put humans right on the cusp between monogamous and polygamous species. But he also said, you know, humans are kept together by these religious prescriptions and other social pressures. He said, if these religions lose their force, serial monogamy or polygamy by any other name quickly emerges. There's a risk here of confusing desire with reality. Humans desire polygamy but are constrained into a grudging form of monogamy by social or religious threat.
And I think this is something as well that Esther Perel again talks about in her book Mating in Captivity. She talks about the shift of relationships culturally and socially to kind of where we see them now, where if anything, monogamy has been put on this, like true monogamy has been put on this huge pedestal of the expectation socially to find the quote unquote the one, right? We want to find that person who is absolutely everything for us. They're our, they provide us with emotional intimacy. They're our best friend. They're supposed to give us sexual excitement and also lifelong stability. And I think this is why, like we've spoken about before, so many people quote unquote cheat and crack, because maybe that's not, it's too much pressure and that's not naturally, quote unquote, how we are kind of wired to be.
Yeah. And a lot of you agreed with this in our DMs. You know, you said culturally and socially we've been conditioned into it, and if it wasn't for this hierarchical kind of like romantic the one love, you reckon that more people would probably be poly. So Charlotte saying society, men over centuries, she said, has pushed the idea of monogamy on us. Justin said there are a lot more people who don't know they're naturally poly because of societal teaching. And Ellie said, I personally haven't been in open relationships, but I think I'm built for them. My ability to love expands beyond just one partner. I can love many at once, and I think humans are built for polyamory, but it's looked down upon and misunderstood in society.
Now, a huge argument, though, when people are trying to figure out whether or not humans are naturally monogamous is, but what about jealousy?
Mm.
Humans get jealous. Mm. And Anna Machen actually explained jealousy in one of the podcast episodes she did, which was really interesting. So she talks about the fact that, firstly, jealousy still exists in happy poly relationships.
Oh my God, we hear from you all the time. Even the most poly people we've spoken to are like, oh yeah, I still get jealous.
Yeah.
Like, I'm managing that.
And so when she talks about what's happening biologically with jealousy, she says it's related to a threat to your reproductive status. So for example, if you are a man and your female partner is having a relationship with someone else, the risk is he will make her pregnant. And if he makes her pregnant, you can't make her pregnant for a good number of months. And that lowers your reproductive state. That's what your jealousy is saying.
Mm.
And if you are a woman and your male partner is having a relationship with someone else, he can go and make her pregnant. And he can make you pregnant at the same time. But what you're risking there is a split of his resources and a split of his investment.
So interesting.
So that's like she's saying on an unconscious level, we don't even realize that biologically these are the mechanisms that's happening in our brain when we get jealous, and it comes from a space of reproductive threat.
This is so crazy because like the more you open up this like Pandora's box, like there's so much fascinating evidence and makes you question everything that you think you know. And like her saying that like jealousy is like a biological signal to basically protect your resource or protect your partner or whatever. I'm literally like, maybe we are more monogamous than I thought. Because coming into this, I thought maybe we were slightly more poly and non-monog.
Doing all this research has genuinely broken my brain.
I know.
Genuinely broken my brain. And I think that like we've kind of said it throughout the episode, genuinely the research, there are so many arguments kind of saying like and showing that actually no, humans are naturally polyamorous.
Mm.
But then there's so many things that are evident towards the fact that no, we're actually naturally monogamous.
Mm.
So I think where I've kind of landed and where like a lot of anthropologists and scientists have landed is the fact that we're like we are serial monogamous, I'd say.
Like
we are supposed to pair bond.
We like love. There's a lot of our biology that's basically being like find that stability in that person. But then your drive is also like.
But I don't think we're sexually monogamous.
No. That's kind of what I got from this research too. I think they call it like electively monogamous.
Yeah.
Right? Or like serial monogamy seems to be a term that people were really like, yeah, humans are much more leaning into this. But I think what we've learned from this is that there are so many variations of it. It seems like if you break it down and not just go monogamy or non-monogamy, because that's just too simple.
I just think humans like, and a lot of the research points to this, like humans are flexible.
Yeah.
And there are so many different ways that we do form relationships and bring up children, whether that's in a village in certain parts of the world, or romantic love isn't even a conversation. It's a very Western idea. So I think that like it's interesting. I do think we're just – there is no answer. We're in the middle. Yeah. I think we're in the middle.
Yeah. And I think like that's fine. I think I'm happy to be in the middle on this and be a bit of a fence.
I do think it breaks people's brains though when you have thought your whole entire life like, no, I'm a wolf, like I'm a mate for life, like I'm a not have sex with anyone
else. I'm a beaver.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that can be pretty confronting to realize like maybe we actually aren't biologically predisposed for that.
Mm. It's so fascinating and it's been such a fun episode to research. And like we said, all of these notes are going to be in our show notes if you want to look at any of the studies and the articles and the podcasts that we listen to.
And also sorry for it being so hetero, but that's just what the research is.
Yeah, it's very hetero. Yeah, thank you so much to everyone who joined in on this conversation. You had so many interesting thoughts and DMs. And yeah, we hope you learned something from this. Obviously, this was like a really big one to unpack. But yeah, we will see you next time.
Okay. And if you have any other ideas for topics that we should unpack, research, please let us know.
Yeah, we're always open.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Triple.